welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. And we are actually here live on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. Somebody pointed out to me that we record all the podcasts live and that I should stop saying that they're live. But we're actually here in Murray Park with a fabulous studio audience. That's you guys. And seated at my right, again, where she belongs, is
Hold on a second.
Is the wonderful Zilpah. Hi, Zilpah.
Hello, John. Hey, everybody.
Hello, Zilpah. All right, so this will be, I think, episode 213 for us. We started in June of 2009, and we started with five fabulous fellows. And one of those was Niall, and here he is at the beginning and at the end.
Hey, folks, I'm the bookends of a fine endeavor. It's fantastic to be here.
Niall is kind of a half-insane anarchist.
I am totally insane. I'm all the way into anarchy. And that's okay, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So, Niall, you actually don't live anywhere near here, do you?
I do live on the planet Earth.
You live in Norway, right?
Yeah, I live in the fine town of Sandefjord, Norway, which at one point was the whaling capital of the world.
So, like, when you say whaling, do you mean like crying with a lot of intensity, or
maybe the whales cried a little bit, but we'll never really know.
So Niall, here's your chance. There's no one here to stop you. Give us your reflection on 3 years of Mormon Expression.
Mormon Expression has been a very important stopping point on my journey out of the church and to a larger, or maybe a lesser extent, a journey out of Mormonism. I said on an early episode that I still claim the title Mormon, and I still do claim the title Mormon. I do, however, despise the LDS culture generally, but it's very easy for me to get away from it. Where I live, there's virtually no religion. Certainly no Mormons, and it's easy just to walk out of that house that is Mormonism.
Isn't your wife? Isn't she a member?
She was a member, but because of me, she got excommunicated.
Because of you.
Because of me.
All right. What do you give us your insider view? You've been able to see a lot of the things that have happened and things that have transpired and things that have gone by. What's your take on this little endeavor?
You know, it's funny how something really takes on a life of its own. I don't think any one of us, when we began, 3 years ago, really had any clue the directions and the windy twists and turns that we would go. I mean, now we have a loosely associated a community of people who are similarly like-minded in a lot of ways. And what I've been surprised about is just so many people online and on the podcast itself who have been able to interact with one another. And, you know, I never would have thought that a podcast could do that to somebody, especially when we didn't set out to create a safe space seems to be used quite a lot. We could call it a douchable space.
Yeah. We were talking about this just the other day because there's been a lot of great writing that has come out. I've said before that everything you need to know about Mormonism has been published in like Dialogue magazine between 1965 and 1980, and there's really not that much new information that's been discovered. But there's something about the communicating voice to voice that makes it that you can you see this at a university all the time. I mean, you pick a college textbook that's got 700 pages. It's written by 14 PhDs who are experienced in the field. Has all these great graphic designs. And then you'll have your kind of professor who can explain to you oftentimes more in 45 minutes than that well-written, well-edited book can do. And that's because we evolved really to listen to stories. We evolved to listen to each other, and that's how we did cultural transmission. So the power, I think, of the podcast that it has been and will continue to be is because we're communicating the way human beings are supposed to communicate. It's not because we were really anything special or what we were saying is anything particularly clever. It's just that's a great means of communication.
It's all about the laughter also. You know, just all the little social, not social, but other kinesthetic clues that you can't get in print.
Yeah, I think so. I think the biggest power of the podcast, I've talked to literally, 1,000 people about it, is the catharsis. Yeah. That comes when, you know, a common message we'll get it probably once a week from somebody new who's discovered the podcast, is they say something like, I feel like I was going insane. I was alone. No one understood me. They would just squint at me, and they couldn't figure out what my concerns even were. And then I hear you call Elder Packer a dick, and then I feel a lot better.
We don't get that ever.
All of a sudden.
Dickish.
Dickish, yes.
That rule came after that comment, so it's excused.
So anyway, that's the podcast. We were going to do a lot more self-reflection during this last little episode. Then we thought, it's getting kind of old. So we're going to go back to a tried and true means of...
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Please.
Because I want to go sit down in the audience.
Yeah.
So that other people can try to fill my shoes.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for having me up here, and thanks for having me part of the project. Anybody who wants to continue to follow the likes of me and Zephyr and the one and only Dr. David Dune, who's sitting right over there, you can follow us on our podcast, which sometimes touches on Mormonism, sometimes touches on religion, but always touches on inappropriate places.
Excellent.
You can follow us at thestochastickitten.com.
Hold on.
And we'll
say.
Yeah, say the name again.
It's The Stochastic Kitten at thestochastickitten.com.
And we'll put a link up for those of us who can't spell anything.
It's like stochastic.
Oh, that helps. All right.
Once again, thanks for everything, guys.
Thanks.
I'll be back. I'll be back there making faces.
All right. So today we're going to talk about our top 10 list of top 10 reasons to open your mouth and take a stand. So the one thing that the podcast has as a unifying theme is that we're talking and wanting other people to listen. We're opening our mouths, sometimes for good and sometimes for bad. So what we would like to do more than anything is well, I don't know if it's more than anything.
For
right now, what we'd really like to do is encourage people to sort of stand up and be counted and have their voice heard. So we've prepared the top 10. We did this yesterday in the car. The top 10 reasons to open your mouth and take a stand. All right, Zilpha, do you want to start us out with number one?
Number 10.
Oh, number 10?
Starting out with number 10. Speaking and writing out our thoughts helps bring clarity to our ideas.
I think that the human mind is sort of a mess, but in the best way. There's things that are connections and things that are going on all the time in your head. And you can think simultaneous contradictory thoughts and stuff like that.
And you might not even realize it.
Yeah.
Because they're all sort of like floating around and mumbly-jumbly.
So I think the bottom line is you don't really know what you believe. You don't really understand your own thoughts until you either write them down or express them to somebody.
Or attempt to. And then when you attempt to and you're like, that doesn't make sense after all, then you can reevaluate your idea and try it again.
The best thing that I scored when I got married to Zilpha was not that she's very beautiful, which she is, and not that she's very intelligent, but she is, but she's an extremely good listener. I lecture at her all the time. And I think part of it is she's good at pretending to listen. Like she has this short-term memory where she can always spit back the last 10 seconds worth of stuff I said, which is a good skill that you should all learn. But
I thought I walked away from you when you were lecturing. I thought you complained that I would go into the other room while you were talking.
Well, that's why I've learned to do it in the car. But just that, being able to work through things, you know, with other people. I won't go there. Any other thoughts on writing and speaking things out?
Heather?
I have a group of good friends who are TBMs who still like me despite my disaffection. But one thing that I cannot do with them is in a private Facebook group that we have, I cannot vent any of my frustration or questions about the church, because they just act like I never posted anything. And I think the reason for that is what they just talked about. I think they know that if they write down what they think or if they have to explain it, that they'll see how ridiculous it is, so they have to just not go there. So that could be one way that we could look at our disaffected friends and family and kind of give them let them off the hook a little bit, is to realize that it might not be that they're angry at you or they're trying to punish you, but they just can't bring themselves to go there themselves, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that reminds me, my brother just this last week asked me to make a list of the 30 good things about the church. And I think he wanted me to do that because he thought if I would write down all the good things about the church, then I would be reconverted because I would, you know, it would like clarify in my mind all those good things. But I told him, well, then I'll do that if you make a list of 35 things that are bad about the church. And he hasn't answered me. It's been like 4 days. So I don't think he likes that idea because that would clarify those issues in his mind. And he wouldn't want to go there.
All right. I think let's go on to number 9. Speaking out helps build a strong sense of who you are and self-confidence in your opinion. It helps you understand yourself. I think a lot of writers and speakers will talk about helping them arrive at their position. And you know, in the first one we were talking about clarity, but this one is sort of self-confidence, sort of a understanding what you believe.
Well, and also it's hard to speak out. It's scary. It's not the easiest thing to do. So it's one of those practice makes perfect things. The more you do it, the easier it becomes, the more confident you become in speaking what you believe and trying to get your thoughts out there. It becomes less scary and you become more confident.
And I think of the people that I've been able to meet, I think 95% of them, 98% of them, are much more intelligent and well-reasoned and well-put-together than they give themselves credit for. That even people who aren't, say, well-educated or whatever, usually their opinions are arrived through a lot of experience and a lot of thought. They may not even be conscious of themselves. And that expressing those things helps them build the idea they can express them, that their ideas are valid. And we live in a consumption culture where you're sort of driven to listen and consume everybody else's stuff and not express your own. But your own is just as valid. I mean, honestly, everybody here in this room has as much experience with Mormonism and with a lot of these things as Zilpa and I do. And you all probably have interesting takes and things that we've never thought of and well-reasoned opinions. And, you know, my point is that for whatever reason in the culture, we sometimes doubt ourselves more than we should. And just forcing yourself through that, I think, can develop a confidence in what you're saying.
Oh, you were going to say something?
I was just thinking, kind of to go against what you were just saying on that last one, that the more you talk about something and say it out loud, I think you almost back yourself up into a corner where now you have to continue believing this. And so I think opposite, sometimes it does build a confidence, but sometimes that's like a misplaced confidence, or it can make you kind of stuck in that same position, right? And because then you have to admit you're wrong if you change your opinion.
But if you have already built your self-confidence that you can express whatever opinion you have, then you're okay. Because you can say, well, I changed my mind.
Yeah,
I agree with you. But actually, I wish more people were sort of confidently wrong. I come from a background where I enjoy debating and openly exchanging ideas, which means disagreement. And I think you're right. I think our culture does have a problem, or our pride or our individuality has a problem with admitting that we're wrong. But at the same time, I do think that you have this cloud of ideas out there that probably have better reason than you think. I think like a lot of religious positions, that there was something I was listening to just recently that said the more criticism you take for your position actually can point to the fact that your position is stronger. Like very, very weak positions usually don't garner much criticism. People just ignore it.
They're sort of like...
Then I start thinking about things like the extremes, like the Westboro Baptist Church, right? Saying they take a lot of heat, right? But one of the reasons they take heat is, as far as Christianity goes, a fundamentalist Christianity, for part of what they're saying, they're sort of right. You know, like a lot of liberal Christians even would agree that homosexuals are going to burn in hell. Right? They just don't want to say it because they're polite. So what Westboro does is they put it out there on placards in a very assholish way. But it makes people uncomfortable because they sort of believe that too. So in a way, even though Westboro does some really crazy, stupid things, in a way, one of the reasons people don't like what they say and criticize what they say is because they are representing the starkest, most fundamental view of some Christian theology. So in a way, they take criticism because they are right, because they are pointing out this discrepancy in Christianity between love and punishment. So I think sometimes that being able to take some abuse for your opinion still can move the dialogue forward. And I think in the long run, Westboro will probably dissuade a lot of people from their fundamentalist views. They'll probably do more harm than they do good, but they'll still, you know, do a lot of stupid things along the way. But I think that's an excellent point. But I still think that from what we said at the beginning, taking all those ideas that are in your head and starting to solidify them helps the thinking process and helps people understand things better.
And you can always alter your opinion or your religion, the side that you're on in a debate.
All right. Number 6. You want to read it?
Oh, I thought I read the lot.
Oh, okay, I'll read it. You are unique and can express things that no one else can. Your thoughts are an important part of the collective consciousness, but only if you share them. Now, I don't think either Zilpher or I believe sort of in the collective consciousness, like the hive mind, but I do think we believe that we're surrounded by lots of opinions and lots of things that we can't fully understand. There's a lot of, I can see even people in this room that even though we've had the same, like Nate or Chris or Brian, even though we've had the same conversations over and over and over again, every time we have them, you know, Nate can express things to me in a new way that helps me understand things again. And literally, you know, we've been over the same material over and over and over again. But I think that sharing of those ideas back and forth helps us solidify and understand those things and see them from a new perspective. And to the point of disagreement, I think there's been a lot of things where people disagree with me in front of me, and I will never back down. Maybe I will, but not usually, in the moment. But 6 weeks later, I might. And I think that collective...
It's like a soup of ideas, and you should add your ingredients to the soup. It makes it a richer, better soup.
But each person has a unique take on those things, is the point. And I think each of those add to the dialogue in a way that one voice can't.
This is Brian. I just wanted to weigh in with that the power of being able to say that I'm wrong about something is one of my favorite new abilities since leaving the church. That if there's no shame, there's no harm, there's nothing wrong with saying, oh, I have new information, I was wrong. And it's not a threat to my ego. That's a great ability to learn new things. It's the opposite of entrenchment.
I agree. There's been a few times I've done it, not very many, but there's been a few times I've done it, and it is absolutely diffusing, and it's absolutely powerful. And most of us here, there's probably folks here who haven't left the church yet. We have this great thing in our past. We had to admit we were not only wrong, we were very, very wrong and fundamentally wrong in a big way. And I think that changes the way you look at everything in the world, because you have that experience. You know, you have to have gone through that, and it makes you skeptical in a way for insiders. Looks sort of negative, but it's this earned skepticism saying, I have been burned, and I understand what it's like, and I know what it's like to be on the inside and be such a strong believer, and that is so powerful in terms of looking at the world.
Yes, yeah, so we're unique, and nobody else can say things the same way you can.
And to the, you know, as we're kind of winding down the podcast a little bit, I think the power of Mormon Expression has not really been Zilpha and I per se. It's been the literally hundreds of people who come on. I think some of the most interesting podcasts we've ever done have been conference. Just because even though people don't have any time to prepare, they come in, they're shooting from the hip, they're not used to doing it. But just to hear conference that we've always heard filtered through these guys in suits, just filtered through different opinions and just different takes. And it doesn't matter, like I said, the schooling or anything, just to hear what one person says about it. Some of the most interesting conference reviews have been from people who aren't Mormon at all, just saying, well, look at all those red chairs. You know, because you get used to seeing the sea of red chairs and you don't see it anymore, right? Okay.
I think we're actually on 6 now.
Okay.
It helps others understand who you are and allows you to be authentic. with other people. So, you know, where in John's family, religion is sort of the elephant in the room, and it's not something that's really discussed. There is a huge part of John and I that they don't know anything about, and that they don't know a huge part of who we are. And we can't share a huge part of who they are because this conversation doesn't exist. And I think in order to have authentic relationships, you have to be willing to share your opinions, even if it's difficult.
I think authenticity is one of those things that's not really valued until you experience it. Because you walk through the world trying to keep people happy. You know, we want to, from the time we're very young, we're socialized to make your teacher happy, play well with your playmates, and all those things that are positive values. But that stuff seeps in into telling people what they want to hear.
And playing a role that you think you're supposed to be playing.
And when you don't feel what people tell you're supposed to feel, you think, I must be broken. Something must be wrong with me. And then once you get over that, no matter how painful it is, that authenticity on the other side is so refreshing, and it makes life so much easier. I was going to say authentic, but that would be kind of circular.
Liberating,
absolutely.
Right, you're no longer sort of all tied up in strings, and like you're not a puppet on strings.
People who are new to the sort of ex-Mormon community, especially the social community, sometimes bristle, especially if they come from outside the church, what is called promiscuous disclosure, which is ex-Mormons get in the habit, especially in social situations, of not holding anything back. This can be actually very healthy, and it can be kind of weirdly entertaining also, but because you start to find out things like... you know, the obvious one is masturbation. Things that were so shameful and so forbidden and so lost are
normal.
You find that they're very normal, and you find out what things actually are like. And there's a healthiness in there's some aspects of our life that are very important aspects and take up a big amount of time that we oftentimes don't talk about. Stay on the theme of sex. If you go to somebody's house and they bake some brownies, You don't feel any shame saying, oh, this tastes really great. How did you get that great vanilla taste? I've been making brownies for 30 years or whatever, and here's my recipe. And there's no shame in acknowledging that somebody can cook something a little bit different or a little bit better, and there's always something you can learn. So it is with sex, but we're socialized not to do that sort of a thing. We're socialized not to talk about that. And so it is with religion, and so it is with politics, and so it is with a lot of things that we're shamed into not talking about. But when you can develop those sort of relationships that are open, where people can exchange ideas, you almost always increase health in the long run, as long as you can make sure that social norm is maintained. Because when you live an authentic life, there are people who aren't going to like you for your new authenticity. And because that's fine. We socialize. We form groups and cliques and whatever. And those groups and cliques are formed out of shared values. And when you expose that your values aren't necessarily shared, you'll find a new set of friends, which means you'll lose some friends. But those new set of friends will be even better and more authentic and more meaningful.
And if any of you have good sex recipes that you'd like to share...
or brownie recipes.
We're collecting them.
Yeah. Okay, next one. If you speak out, you don't allow your enemies to speak for you.
Or just people who disagree. They may not be your enemies, but you don't allow the opposite point of view to be the only one that's being heard.
These become increasingly important as we go down the list to us. But this one is extremely important, and this happens all the time, that things are defined by those who don't participate, that the apostate is defined by the church member, that the Republican is defined by the Democrat. And oftentimes what this does, it forms a caricature, a shell of what you actually are, because we're actually very complicated, diverse people who are involved in lots of things, and some of them contradictory. But if we stay silent, and we see this a lot in the ex-Mormon community, because being critical of the church has social cost. And I think most people just sort of say, I don't want to incur that social cost. That's completely understandable. But what that does is they're always going away. There's a reason the church says things like, ex-Mormons can leave the church, they can't leave it alone. What they're saying is, leave it alone. They're saying, you shouldn't be talking about this. You're not allowed to participate in the dialogue.
And they're saying, if you members hear any ex-Mormons talking about the church, you can just blow it off because they just, you know, they just have an axe to grind.
So as we see the rise of the voice of whatever it is, and we see a lot of this recently in the culture, the rise of the voice of the homosexual community, and we start seeing that people don't fill all the stereotypes. We see the rise of the voice of you know, ex-Mormonism or whatever. Atheism is the one I was thinking of. Thank you. Even things like Islam, you know, where we get these caricatures on the news of what somebody who believes in Islam is, and what we need is people to stand up and say, no, you know, I don't wear a headscarf, and I do this, and I don't do that, because then it doesn't allow this caricature of what we are to be defined.
So we've covered this a little bit, but just an emphasis on when you speak out, you find other people who are similarly minded, you make new friends, and you realize that you are not alone, you're not insane. and it's social connections that are, like we said before, authentic, that you can't get if you're not willing to express who you are.
I don't care what it is. You'll find that if you express that I'm into knitting, like let's say you go to a place like the VIP lounge or someplace where there's a mixture of people, you will immediately find new friends who are also, and it can be virtually anything, from knitting to buggery. You can be into anything, and there'll be somebody else who's into that thing too, and you start to connect with other people, and you start to develop those friendships. And this can be one of the most important things about being authentic and speaking out to your voice, is you find allies. And that's something socially that we need, that we evolved to live in communities that had shared values and shared narrative and shared story. And then we live in a pluralistic society, which is great in many ways, but socially for the individual it can be difficult. And so to make those connections between people who are similar to you is extremely powerful. I'll go ahead into the next one, which is the flip side of it, but I have it ranked higher on the list because it's actually more important. You help others realize that they're not alone. Because you do take a social cost by standing up, and you're going to lose friends when you stand up and speak your voice. But other people are going to hear that, and are they going to know that there are others just like them?
If they're not to the point where they feel like they can say anything or act on what they've been thinking, you being there can keep them from sinking into the depths of despair.
I'm glad you mentioned this one, because I was going to bring it up if you didn't. But there's a social psychologist from the 50s or 60s. His name's Martin Ash, and he did all these experiments on conformity in social groups. And one of the results of the experiment was that in the presence of a single ally that stands up in opposition to the group,
a single one ally
that speaks up, you have to know that the ally is there. Conformity drops by up to 80%. It's an extraordinarily powerful thing to know you have an ally out there, and it gives other people the courage to speak up. And I think that's a magnificent observation.
Huge.
And I think if you look at history, we know the names of a lot of dissidents. Probably we know more names of dissidents through history than we know conformists. But a lot of these guys took great social cost. But that rallying point is so important. Now, we're all not going to be, you know, Gandhi. But we can be sort of that sort of leader in our own little communities, in our own little social group, in our own family, just one or two people. There's somebody, I guarantee, who needs to hear what you have to say and who needs to move the community. And as we've sort of built tried to build a community around Mormon Expression or some of the other projects like we have, like the Living Community, it is so imperative that there are others besides, say, Zilpha and I, and this has absolutely happened, who have slightly different opinions or contradictory opinions, because it's that mix, it's that stew that makes it worthwhile. With one ingredient, nothing tastes good.
Well, I'm trying to think. Milk tastes good.
Well, the cow eats. All right. Okay, I'll give it to you. An apple. All right, thanks for shitting all over my point, you guys. All right. Okay.
Okay, wait, we're on number three,
yes.
You open up the topic for conversation, and that helps the discussion move forward so that we don't stagnate in our ideas. As a community, as a city, as a state, as a country. There has to be constantly new ideas to consider, and that moves the dialogue forward.
The best person to invite to your party is not the best talker. It's the best person to start everybody else talking, the one who can start the discussion. And oftentimes, there's so many people who are like, me too, but I would never brought that up. So somebody who can go out there and get the discussion rolling. And these people will take a lot of heat. And sometimes they'll take friendly fire. I use our friend John DeLynn as an example. This guy takes tons of heat, but he has moved the needle forward so much on the discussion between what's acceptable and what's not. How we're going to live together as Mormons and non-Mormons. Who can define what anybody is? And like I say, the guy has taken bullets, and I've fired a few of them myself. But he's moved that thing so forward. And probably if anybody is in, who's not part of the big outside or the big inside going to change the church, it's probably going to be him. But it's costly. Now, most of us don't have to ever fight battles on that level, but we can fight these little battles in our own neighborhoods, in our own families, among our own friends, and we can get the discussion moving forward. And I see a lot of progress, for example, in the ex-Mormon community in the last 10 years or so, issues of feminism, where a lot of the prejudices that women have against women and men have against women have been carried from our culture into the ex-Mormon community. In the last couple of years, I think people have become more aware of those things on both sides of the sexes. And that's because people are willing to say things sometimes that are a little bit uncomfortable and point out that there are behaviors that or things that are being said even innocently that cause some pain.
Right. I was going to say, I think this goes to taboos, and some taboos are useful and harmless. Some taboos are harmful. And if nobody is willing to cross the line, that will never change, ever. So somebody has to be willing to make it okay to talk about certain things.
Indeed. Okay, number two.
You can change the world, or at least a small part of it. Perhaps you'll change someone's mind or heart, and that will change a life for the better.
And I think this can happen in tiny, tiny ways. That just being there and seeing an example, one of the criticisms, since I've thrown the middleweight guys a bone, I need to take it back. One of the criticisms I've had against people in the middle way is that just their mere presence in church can have others look at them and say, oh, if that guy can stomach all this bullshit, then I can too. It must be true. But that goes both ways. You know, if people in your neighborhood see that you're a normal, caring woman, you know, that you're involved in the community the same way you were before, and they say, but she was sleeveless, so she doesn't have garments, but she's still really nice. It starts to play with people's minds a little bit. But just anything we do can have tiny effects on the next generation or on people around us that can make us feel so much better. And I think at one time during our disaffection, most of us have looked up to somebody and said, well, I know that person, you know, has made a difference. And it can pull us out of that sort of depressive funk.
Right, so, and you don't have to split the Red Sea, but if you like start throwing in pebbles and make ripples, it will make a difference in the world. It will change the world.
But I don't think we can underestimate or go low how small actions can make a big difference for people. And I think a lot of us feel, or there's times in our lives when we feel more empowered to speak out, and there's times when we're more shy. But just those little teeny differences can make the difference in everybody's lives. Because that's how we evolve. We evolve to depend on each other. And I've said before, you know, we've made some great social progress. But one of the most negative things that we've done is we live in these little boxes separated from each other. I think there's a part of our DNA that's screaming out and saying, this there's something fundamentally wrong about
this. It's like being in a cage at the zoo.
And, absolutely. And I'm not saying that we should all go start live in a commune right now, although that might be fun. But I think what we have to do is because we have built those walls around us, we live in these little cars that are boxed off, and these houses that are boxed off, we have to make this effort to make those changes in as small ways as possible. I think that probably in all the stuff that I've observed in the years we've been doing this and involved the community, the most important thing I've ever seen anybody do is just to like invite somebody over for dinner or something like that. Just to reach out a little bit and say, you know, come into my space, come into my home. And in a way, that's one of the most difficult things to do, because you know you don't have a perfect home. And you know your cat stinks a little bit.
It makes you vulnerable. Anytime you open yourself up, you become vulnerable in some way. And that's one of the things that's difficult about taking a stand, opening your mouth, is that you could get hurt. You could get criticized. But for all these reasons, and one more, it's worth it. I had a thought, now it just left me.
But one of the first things we ever did is that this was when Calm, the community after leaving Mormonism, was just started. And we went to it, and we decided everybody was there was old. Now we're the old people, I guess. But so we decided we were gonna put ourselves out there, and we were gonna have a party for young couples with young children. Our children were 3 and 4, and really, really crazy.
We didn't think they were old, but we were looking for other people with young kids.
With young kids, that's what it was. So we opened up and put a party out there, and one other couple showed up. In a way, that's sort of tragic. Like nobody came. But in another way, they have been our great friends since. And from them, we've met lots of other people, and the value of that relationship in our lives is huge. From that one thing that you could look at as not successful.
As a failure, but it wasn't.
And you know, what I tell people whenever they're doing things, be it through the community or through ex-Mormonism, through Mormon Expression, you got to keep doing it even though it appears to not be successful. Because I guarantee for however many people are here today, you know, probably about 30 or 40 people here, there'll probably be another 50 or 60 who will tell me at parties or send me emails saying, I really wanted to go, but... And sometimes it takes time. We had a woman at our house a few months ago, and she said she literally had come out to one event and sat in the parking lot in her car, and because she couldn't develop the courage.
She was too afraid to actually get out of her car and come meet people. She came all the way to the event and never met anybody.
But once you do that little
thing
of just having that social contact, I think is all it takes. All right, our number one reason to open your mouth and take a stand. If you don't speak up, who will? Just because others share your opinion doesn't mean they should do all the work of speaking out and engaging in discussions. Don't be lazy. Take a stand. I think for some of these things that we're talking about, these issues of, like, let's say, misogyny in our culture, sexual shaming for people for non-standard lifestyles.
Homosexuality. Well, that goes with that.
Homosexuality. Taking, you know, how apostates are dealt with, these cause an enormous amount of pain. You know, one of the things I've said before that's gotten me sort of in trouble is I've said the church is evil. And when I say talk about church, I talk about the corporate.
I thought you said it was all a standing pile of shit.
Well, I have said that too.
But I didn't say, maybe you have said it's evil.
But one of the reasons I say that is because where I sit, I've seen a lot of the pain, I've seen a lot of the suffering, the marriages. And it's the reverse of what we're saying. Sometimes in little ways, people who don't sort of believe some of this stuff perpetuate it and cause this generational pain, these divorces, these separations, this loss of custody, all these things that have real solid negative impact in people's lives. And I think there's a time that we need to stand up and say, no more, not on our shift. And we need to do whatever we can to put a dent in it, even if we're going to take hits for it. Zilpha recently, in the last 6 or 8 months, set up that mass resignation. We had about 150 people show up. We had about 55 letters, I think, we ended up sending. Most of those represented families, so those letters represented probably, you know, up to 200 people. We probably had another 100, 150, 200 people who, in conjunction with the first announcement of that activity, sent out their letters. By my estimation...
We live in different states and different countries.
By my estimation with the event, we probably took 3 wards worth of people off the books.
Which isn't huge, but every little pebble in the pond makes an impact.
So one of the criticisms was 150 people, that's not a mass anything. But what you have to realize is that thing was picked up by, I think, 80 or 100 newspapers, major news outlets across the world. We've since talked to reporters from Australia, Denmark, and from Denmark and from different places. Because that act was significant in the realm of Mormonism, it never happened before. And for all those who participated in a little way, they made huge impact. And it's easy to say, because we had people say to us, well, how many people are coming? Because I'm not coming unless you have 500 people.
Right, because I don't want to be embarrassed. If it's not like a lot of people, I don't want to be like one of 10 marching up the hill looking stupid.
But all things start small. And that's something that we can all do.
And it's not fair to expect someone else to take the stand every time.
So everybody
has the power to do something.
Yeah, definitely. So for all of our listeners out there, if you've rejected, you know, Mormonism, find ways, and this doesn't mean you have to be like a jerk at work or anything, find ways to sort of let your opinion be known. You know, like, and you have to do it wisely.
Yeah, because especially in your family, where you're going to have long-term relationships, or at work, where you have to keep coming back and dealing with those people over and over again, you don't want to be dickish, and you don't want to
have a potty mouth today. You know that
because you're not doing it. Usually, I can count on you. But you don't want to make enemies that don't have to be made.
I think so.
It has to be done carefully, but confidently. And I think people will respect you if you are respectful in the way you approach the topic.
Yeah, I agree. And I think probably this boils down to boundaries. And you'll hear this a lot, that you need to set good boundaries. And you know, that means that you can leave your coffee maker up on the counter when your mother comes over to visit.
That took us years to do. But now not only do we have the coffee maker, but we've got...
The hooch?
The excess liquor bottles that don't fit in the cabinet. We thought about hiding them, but, you know, we're not sitting around drinking all the time. So they can see that, yeah, they do drink, but obviously they're still, you know, they're still running a household, jobs,
finishing
school.
Is that activism or laziness, though?
That's
what's next. Your hookah, and you're going to leave your little mirror and your razor blade there on the table. Where does the madness stop? We have
no hookah or razor blades besides for just to be clear.
No, we don't. Not yet. All right. So take a stand. That's our top 10, and you know our. The benefits that we've received from doing the podcast don't come materially. They haven't come from accolades or anything like that. They've just come from the people we've been able to meet and the communities that we've been able to see form. And I know there's been a lot of spin-off communities or whatever, and that's great. I think that people need to connect. And if they can find each other and do something, that's the most important thing.
And I was going to say, for me also, I've gained a huge amount of confidence, which was one of the early things, but it's been huge for me.
This is Niall again. I'm going to add a zero to this, and I can't believe this didn't make your top 10, but speaking out, living an authentic life, being your true self, annoying your people around you a little bit, inspiring others to do this, the real reason all of you should do this a little bit more in your lives is because it's fun. It's absolutely fun. And, you know, I think that should have been number one, so I'm making that number zero.
All right.
Thank you,
Niall. So who else has things that we left off? We, you know, we made this list up in an hour, and I was tired. What other things leave off the list of living authentic?
Well, we can also transition if anybody wants to make any comments about what has been meaningful about the podcast, about us speaking out.
Sure.
If it's made a difference to them. Or...
Say your name again.
My name's Andrew. I think it's important to talk out, to be able to say it's okay to talk about these things, that the church is such a, you know, correlated and, you know, this is the way we talk about these things and this is the agenda that's okay to talk about. I think it's good to just talk about how you feel and that it's okay to question. I mean, even if you start to look into history and all aspects of Mormonism and you end up going back, you know, being fully active and everything, I think it's okay to question those things. And I think really doctrinally in the church, it is okay to question things. It's okay to make mistakes. That's why there's the atonement. That's why we have all this, You know, we learn things. I think it should be okay to say you don't know if you believe this yet. It's okay to talk about that and say, hey, you know what? Polygamy makes me feel uncomfortable. You know, what do you think about that? Why? How did you overcome this? Regardless of what your end result is, it should be okay to talk about it.
Yeah. In fact, it would be awesome if we could get those discussions flowing in the chapels, too, and not just in the parks on Sunday.
To that, I think the secret is the church has its Google problem, and there's all these blogs, you know, excellent writing that's been done. There's been the podcasts and the websites, you know, things like Mormon Think have been just the impact on people being able to access them. And there's still more that needs to be done and more that needs to be said. And I think everybody has a role they can play in putting that out there, because it's really not any, it's not like Utah Lighthouse Ministries or any like powerful organization that has caused a problem to the church. It's the democratization of information. It's the accessibility. And I think probably that was part of the power of Mormon Expression. It was easy to listen to. You just put it in your iPad and you got on your little, treadmill, and you could listen away
and
foster seeds of doubt.
Fun and entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. So and I think we can all participate in that in little ways.
And it's going to continue. Just to be clear, we are reducing our output, but we're not going away.
Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hey. Christopher Hitchens, when he wrote God Is Not Great, subtitle How Religion Poisons Everything, refused to back off that last statement when he was challenged about that. There have been other powerful intellects. Steve Pinker, in his latest book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, takes a little bit different stand on that. So I'm going to challenge you on the notion that the Mormon Church damages or ruins everybody's lives. I don't think that a good portion, my experience with the population, and I deal in my business with people exchanging money on a daily basis. I'm a money changer. I'm a bourgeoisie. And when I deal with people on a daily basis, most people don't have the intellectual power or stamina to have this conversation. They're just kind of making it through life, and for some, a regularized institution such as the Mormon Church, Jehovah's Witnesses, some of whom I associate with as well. I'm familiar with many religious communities. I spent time in the Middle East for a couple years studying, and I recognize the power that Islam has in developing communities of people, in spite of the evil and the bad parts that religion has. I think that for some, it has a powerful ability to make them feel like they belong to something, that there are people there. I am sort of semi-active. I'm not a believer. But in the meantime, there still are people in my small town, in my community, that I think have benefited by the dominance of the Mormon institution, because I come from southeastern Idaho. And it's a powerful force there.
Yeah, I agree with you that a lot of people actually need that sort of militarization of their lives, or their lives would spin out of control. And there are people who do need something very strict to follow, because they don't have the tools and the coping mechanisms, but they could maybe learn them.
The same thing that applies to gay marriage. If you would ask somebody 5 years ago, the numbers have skewed tremendously over a short period of time. And so, you know, we just...
Right, and that's because
we're evolving, and we're doing quick. The way that I see it, the church, there's two powerful issues that are moving this along. One is the gay issue. The church has got to do something about that. They're losing people. People are, you know, we saw that when mothers start getting involved to allow their children not to be excommunicated, to allow their boys or their young girls who have come out. When you got mothers that are on the forefront of pushing that issue, something's going to be done. The second issue is the internet. Those two powerful issues are going to push the church, the contemporary church, to a great degree. And I think that though the internet and the gay issue are really going to push things forward. So
yeah, I agree. So and Steve, I agree with everything you said. And it's an excellent point. You know, when I say the church is evil, this is an argument that surfaces from time to time. That doesn't mean they're all evil. They obviously do very many good things. And I think there's a lot of stuff that's buried in what you're saying that sort of needs to be unpacked over time. And if this is like 101, 201 is we need to build something. This is talking about you need to stand for something, you know, to paraphrase Brother Hinckley. But the next thing is there are a lot of people, and we have met them, and we have all been them from time to time, who need more than we can give. And I think the biggest criticism I have about the communities, including the ones that I've helped build, in the ex-Mormon or post-Mormon world, is we tend to focus on the brightest and best, and we tend to focus on a high level of discourse, and there's this sort of certain opt-in. What the churches have always done, they've filled an evolutionary niche in that there are people who they may not be as smart as you and I, or they may be suffering from a number of things. They may be homebound. They may be socially not very connected. They may be sick. They're dying. They're having children. I mean, what religions have done is taken care of people over their lifespan. And I think for atheists, it's an excellent criticism of the community is we sit on our ivory thrones and criticize the world around. But oftentimes we're not as good at building up those social things that we all need. Because the stupidest thing that we all do, and I do it, is we go to people who are apparently in need and say, let me know if you need anything. And no one is going to let you know if you need anything. You have to kick down their door, and you have to go force your kindness on them. And that's what churches do. They watch over the flocks. And that's what we need to build next.
It's a challenge.
And that's where I think, to your point, Steve, I think that the churches have been great at doing that. And we criticize them on some fronts, and we tend to just ignore the social garbage they're taking out every day. I don't mean
the safety net that they cast out for the people who are really suffering.
And I think as a criticism, we all need to focus on that. How do we reach out? How do we build community? And most of you probably will know the irony of what we're saying, given where we are right here today, because it's something here in Utah that we're trying to build. We have friends across the country who are trying to build that. But you know, we need everyone's help on that. And I think to what we're talking about here, that can be built out in a million ways, but sort of the world needs the next thing. And it'll take us all working to build that on words Brian gave me a long time ago, on scales larger than our own, right?
Time frame longer than our own.
I just want to say, you know, one of the things the church always tells you is that you're a peculiar people and that you need to be the light on the hill and stuff. And I feel like that we need to take that and turn it around. And we need to be that person that everyone's like, you know, I get it all the time, and I'm not trying to say I'm so wonderful or anything, but I get it all the time that people are like, oh my gosh, you're not Mormon. I was quoted in that Reuters article, and I've had some backlash, but not as bad as I thought. And most people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're not Mormon, but you're such a good person. And this last year, I was the PTA president at my kid's school. And I think that was such a great thing to do because I said to my husband, it made me have to like say to my ward members and my neighbors, I'm still here and I'm still a good person and you cannot ignore me and you cannot say that I'm bad and that I'm doing bad things because I'm here and I'm doing good stuff. And I think that we need to turn that around and make sure that people, like, I think it's a good thing when people say, oh, but you're such a good person. yep, we are. We are a great group of people. And just because we don't have the same belief as you, and because we quit drinking the Kool-Aid, doesn't make us a bad person anymore. And I really think that that's like the biggest reason of all to say something and to be open and out there. And sometimes it's really scary, but I know for me that every time I've spoken out, there's always been at least one person that's quietly sometimes come to me and said, wow, you know, can I find out more? And so, you know, we need to turn it around and be that example.
Yeah,
so
I agree. Excellent.
Thank you for the testimony.
Yeah, maybe we should have like pass along cards or something.
Find out more.
The last word on community, and this this is the last podcast we're recording on the weekly schedule. What we've built in with Mormon Expression, especially when I think about that, I think about all of you and everybody who's listening and this sort of community, that we've been able to knit together. We have great things, and I would suggest everyone listening, everyone here, if they're on Facebook, get onto the VIP lounge. You'll meet lots of very interesting people and lots of, interesting discussions. Our next live podcast will be on September 29th in Phoenix. Zilpha and I will be down there. It will be actually, it's right now it's scheduled in a city called Lehi. Actually, you know, much of the Gilbert and Mesa era was all settled by Mormons.
But it's spelled differently, isn't it? Isn't it like
maybe,
L-E-H-I-G-H?
It could be. So we'll be there. If you're down in that area, then come on out. Email us for instructions. We're actually not filming it. We'll be recording it at an individual's house. They happen to have this great big yurt in their backyard. We'll be recording it. We'll be having a dinner, then a party into the wee hours of the night. Anybody in Utah wants to travel down with us, we're probably going to fly, but we'd be happy to bring a party down with us, and we'll farm ourselves out and stay with the locals. probably in February, we're looking at a live broadcast in Boise, up to the Caldwell area is another Mormon hotbed that we must invade and infiltrate. So we'll be heading out there. Very shortly, August 24th, Zilph and I will be in Denver, and there is a group of about 20 or so people who are meeting there. So if you're in the Denver area, get in touch with us, and you're more than welcome.
Let us know. And there's also a group, I don't know if we're going to be able to make it, but it's in January, right, in Portland, when the Book of Mormon musical is going to be
there,
in
there is
in
a
Portland.
Big group of 100 who are going to the Book of Mormon musical on January 6th. If you're in that area, you can contact us, and we can hook you up with that group. And you can get in and see. We'd like to make it out there. Just because of the time of the year, I don't know if we will. There will be more social events, more things happening with Mormon Expression. And then we have all the other great things that we have started that we talked about, you know, in the last week or two that people are happy to, or we'd be more than happy to get along with. Did I say it right?
Get along with?
The camping trip, which we just got done with. There's several people here. It was a wonderful time. We've set up another group for the camping trip 2013. If you can make it to Utah. There were a lot of people.
Start planning.
That thing filled up by February. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to open it now early for as many people as want to. We're going to work with the group to set up a date, and we're probably going to rent out a private facility so that we can get everybody who wants to come. And who's going to give their testimony? Anybody?
Testimony of the camp out?
Brian.
Oh, a free soapbox? Why, sure, I'll hop up on it. The camp out was fantastic. There was I brought my 7-year-old son along, and at first I was kind of hovering around him. And after a while, he kind of started pushing back because he didn't want me interrupting. He was playing with all these kids that he'd never met any of them before. But fell in with a group, and they played laser tag and like sang camp songs and
pirates.
It was amazing, and it was hours and hours long that he just wanted to play with these kids, and that's all he wanted. But he had that camping experience with other kids and that socialization without the kind of the spiritual overtones that is just so positive and so great. And then that left me free to like. Socialize with as many people as I could possibly talk to. Ate it up. So good.
It was almost all families, and even for those who weren't, they were welcome and just brought right in.
Yeah, I think the most powerful thing was.
We're going to talk about the cruise next.
Seeing the kids just eat it up and just love each other.
And then we will continue to have our annual cruise or getaway. We're looking at a lot of different options. We're trying to find the best option for the lowest price. And we have a Facebook group set up for that. We'll be happy to get you in and help do the planning.
What's it called? And they can request it.
It's called, I think, Mormon Expression 2013 Cruise or something like that. But if they could just contact Zilpha or I on Facebook or through email, we'll be happy to give you the link. Brian, plug the cruise.
Oh, man. That, I've said this on a number of occasions to you, that I think that might have been the best vacation I've ever been on in my life. I was surrounded by like-minded adults in a largely kid-free environment. Several of the people who rode down with me are here today. And we formed this friendship that is so meaningful and so powerful. We've gotten it together many times since, and we will for many years in the future. And that was the vehicle, and it was magnificent. I'm so glad I went. Won't miss another one if I ever have a...
Yeah,
I'll say amen to that.
Ignore all the bullshit we say all the time. That if you can get together with other people, it will be such a meaningful experience in your life. So we're going down our litany. November 9th, 10th, and 11th, Las Vegas. If you're in Utah, we're getting a couple of vans. We're going to drive down together. So because what Brian said, the way down where you're stuck in the car and you can't go anywhere, and you can only complain about the church for the first hour, then you got 5 hours, you got to come up with something else to talk about. So even if you fly into Utah and drive down, it'd be well worth it. And once again, you know, we're trying to be as cost conscious as we can and just find places where we can all be together.
Right, and the emphasis is always on making connections and sort of forming friendships. It's not about really anything else.
If you go to the website, mormonexpression.com/community, we have contacts from all over the country of people who are like-minded and just sort of seed that get-together. There's other great organizations out there. The community after leaving Mormonism has a couple of sort of chapters that are still active in Utah.
Post-Mormon
has local chapters, and they're doing things all the time. Of course, the Mormon Stories groups, they have chapters all over. Just get out and meet people. It's the most important thing you can do, whether you choose to stay in the church or leave the church, to meet some of the most fascinating people who grew up and share the same background that you do.
And form a new community.
And form a new community.
Form a new community.
Yep. All right, well, I think that's I'm all out of words. Anybody have any... You notice I say I'm out of words, and I don't even take a breath. I just keep going, just straight through. anybody else have any pithy things to say? Well, discussion will continue on the website, and look for new episodes of Mormon Expression. Mormon Expression will. I have made the decision. We will be doing conference.
Reviews will continue.
Will continue. So don't cancel your feed. If you've been one of those generous people who've been giving us a little bit, we are trying to fuel as much of that money into these new projects and keeping things like this afloat. So consider extending your generosity. And we're a nonprofit. We're a little slow, but we have our first quarter and second quarter financial statements to be posted pretty soon here. So we're trying to be as transparent as possible. And we're open to new ideas people have. We're just looking to help build community and get factual, accurate information out about the church. All right. Well, Zilpha, good night.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks, everybody.